Did you know African American women under the age of 35 have breast cancer rates that are 2 times higher than white women of the same age? We're talking surviving breast cancer. Let's talk about it, y'all.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Gotta have respect and transparency, so let's talk about it.
Vicky J, thanks for tuning back in. Today we're talking surviving cancer, and we have a special guest with us. Her name is Dion. Say hello to the people, Dion.
Hi, people.
We are so excited to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Of course.
So we are talking surviving cancer, and you are a cancer survivor. So We want to know, what kind of cancer did you have?
So that's like a complex question. The short answer is breast cancer. Mm-hmm. The long clinical answer is invasive ductal carcinoma.
Okay.
I feel like I'm saying it wrong. And it was ER positive, PR positive, and HER2 positive, also known as triple positive.
Okay. And when you, for someone who doesn't know that, can you explain, like, what does triple positive mean?
Right. So there are different tests that they run to understand which therapy is best to treat your cancer based on the way that your cancer behaves. So that's looking at how quickly do the cells replicate or duplicate, or the scientific where it would be proliferate, I think it is, or how quickly and what your cancer is feeding off of. So for me, to have ER positive meant it fed off of the hormone estrogen. PR positive meant it fed off of progesterone. And HER2 positive meant that it replicated extremely fast. So if you imagine, just like a visual that I always use, which is what my doctor said, imagine that you have like a circular, like a circle, right? And that's your cell. And at north, south, east, and west, you have a pair of hands. Mm-hmm. And every time a cell interacts with another pair of hands and shakes hands, they replicate. Mm-hmm. So instead of having north, south, east, and west, I had, which would be like 4 pairs, I had like 100 pairs mm-hmm. on one cell. So it replicated extremely fast. So that also gave them clear insight into the exact treatment that they would use based on how my cancer behaved.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question for you. What kind of, you know, interventions did you undergo to treat the cancer? Because it does depend on the type of cancer, what treatment options you have.
Yeah, so it's not only the type of cancer, but then the stage. Right. And then they also consider like the patient. So I was 26 at the time. Mm-hmm. So they consider like, okay, how aggressive, what are the different, you know, modes we're going to use, because she still has a very long life expectancy. Right. And I had no issues, no health issues at all before. I think the last time I had gone to the doctor before that, I think my potassium was low, like very, like slightly. And she was like, my recommendation was eat a banana each day. Right. So it's like, you go from eat a banana to girl, this whole thing. So first I actually did fertility preservation. So they harvested eggs because I was 26 and they didn't know if I would be able to naturally have children after this, if I wanted to. So I did fertility preservation with all of the shots and all of that. Mm-hmm. Then literally the day after they harvested the eggs, I started chemo, which was, they took a neoadjuvant approach, which means they are going to treat and try to shrink the tumor first and then go in and do surgery. So I started with chemotherapy and targeted therapy. The chemotherapy and my cocktail was called TCHP. I don't remember off the top of my head. I think T, well, that doesn't matter. It was the TC was the chemo, or the chemotherapy drugs that attacked all fast-growing cells, which is why, like, your hair falls out and all that stuff. Right. And the HP is a targeted therapy that they use specifically for the HER2 positivity piece. Okay. So that targeted therapy, it was all four, and then you, between like the day before, the day of, and the day after chemo, I had 18 different medications.
Wow.
18.
Yeah. Wow. So I can't even imagine going from, like you said, being healthy, having to eat your banana a day maybe, to 18 pills per day. What I want to ask you is, for somebody who, because you know I'm in the medical field, so some of these terms that you're using I'm familiar with, but when you say chemotherapy, can you kind of explain that process? Is this something where you're getting a needle stuck in your arm? Are you taking pills?
Right. So there are different types of chemotherapy, I know. Like, even now, I honestly think technically the medication that I still, one of the medications that I take, I believe reading somewhere that it was like it can be used as a chemotherapy, but it can, chemo could be form or a pill form, but I know what people are most used to seeing is the IV. Right. So that was another process I forgot. I had, it was on St. Patrick's Day where I had my, I went under and they placed the port for where they would access. A port is just literally, think of it like a port in a harbor, right? And the harbor is my body and the blood, right? The port is literally the port where they put the needle in, and it's an easy, sterile, safe, but very risky. Like, you have to be, like, the technician or the nurse has to be trained in how to use that port or access the port in order to, you know, administer the medication. So I started with, at least with the chemotherapy and targeted therapy, it was liquid. But all of those other medications, it was like a steroid that was pill formed to make sure my body, you know, to calm my body down just in case it went wild. I had two different anti-nausea drugs. They would give me Benadryl just in case I had an allergic reaction there. Like, it was all kinds of, I can keep going on and on.
Yeah. So how long did you undergo treatment?
So technically I'm still in treatment.
Okay.
My entire treatment plan is 5 years.
Okay.
From literally from beginning to end. So I'm on like year 3.54 because I've taken breaks from this hormone therapy a couple times. But the chemotherapy, right? So the TC, the taxotere and carboplatin, that's what it was called. So the TC and HP, which they did together, which was like the IV, was for, how did I do it? Once every 3 weeks for 6 treatments. So 18 weeks. Did I do my math? Yeah. And then after that, I continued, like, there were other, then I waited a month, I think it was, and then I had my surgery, double mastectomy, and then after that, and, but while I'm doing that, I had to still do the HP portion of the infusion for a whole year. So I started, chemo was for 18 weeks, but the targeted therapy was for a full year, and in between that, I had surgery and radiation in that. What was that? November, December of 2016.
Okay. And so you had radiation. You want to explain to the people what exactly radiation is for them that don't
the
know?
Worst. The worst. Oh, Lord. Radiation is literally radioactive beams of energy that are very intense, that literally burn at a cellular or on a cellular level. It burns or treats, as they would like to say, a certain area to kind of make sure or reduce the risk of, or to eradicate anything that chemo or whatever other therapy they've chosen, you know, works. But then some people just do radiation, but radiation has actually been the hardest treatment out of everything, even where I am now. Mm-hmm. Radiation was the worst, and I still feel the effects of radiation today. So that's radiation.
Yeah. Well, thanks for explaining that, because I feel like, you know, we hear about cancer, we hear about the treatments, but no one really explains that process and what that entails. And I think that if we would just take time to kind of explain that to the public, you know, I can't say it's going to be less scary, but I mean, information is power. Like, do you feel like if you would have known beforehand, because we know the different kinds of cancer, you know, there's breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, but just kind of knowing like these are the treatments and this is what they entail. Do you feel like it would have made your process a little bit more easier? Just having that knowledge, kind of what to expect?
No, and here's why, right? My mom died from breast cancer when I was 12. So I knew, I'd seen very up close what that journey looked like. So that was, what, from 2000 to 2002. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, 2002, I watched that journey with her. So I knew what it looked like back then, at least. You know, that was almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I knew what it looked like, but I definitely, when you say knowledge is power, I am somebody who literally, I went on JSTOR, EBSCOho, all of these different, you know, websites that house, you know, scholarly journals. Mm-hmm. I was on there reading. I was reading through the trials. I was reading through, interpreting the data. I was looking at even like, I knew, I had read so much online from like literal clinical trials and, you know, published studies that I knew I can look at an x-ray and tell, oh, that's a cyst, or that looks like cancer, because I'm informing myself. Like I remember back in December when I first, you know, had the whole, I saw a whole other story of how we even found it. I took mental images of the x-rays or the mammogram, because I was like, I know they're not going to say anything, but I know the tech knows what she's looking at, but I knew what it was before they officially said it, because I'd read so much. So I came in, and all my doctors kind of laugh about this. It's like, you know everything. It's like, yes, because we are partners here, okay? So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm an advocate for educating yourself. The key thing is that you knew the right sources to look, you know, to get that information. Yeah. That's important, too, where you're getting your information from. For everything, you can't do a Google search and find but that is power within itself. So that way, you were going into that process being an informed patient. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes I say we kind of lack that, I feel like, in the medical field. A lot of times we're quick to give, well, this is what we recommend. Sometimes we kind of forget to kind of explain the risks, the benefits, and, you know, well, this is another option, or this is another option.
But when
you walked in there with that information, you can already bring that to them. Well, what about this? Because I did read about this, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I also feel like they are still like, yes, I can read, but you specialize in this, so there's a different level of experience that you have, but I am an expert in my body, right? I've lived in my body since I was born, right? So if I'm, but that I can't just walk up to the doctor and say that, well, it's my body, blah blah blah, like that is a truth. But it's like, okay, have you equipped yourself with your normal, do you understand your patterns and your trends to now present that data, you know, whether it be anecdotal or if you've been more strategic about tracking things, do you have that data to have an informed conversation about your body?
And that's my patient as a physical therapist. I'm just like, you know your body better than anybody else. And you have to listen to your body. Like, your body is so unique. It will tell you when something is off. You just have to listen and be aware of that. Your body will tell you when you've done too much. You know, like, it will tell you. So I'm a big advocate of that. You got to know your body. You got to know what's your norm. Not what the book says is norm, but what is your norm? Because it's different for everybody.
Yep. That's low-key, like, my, like, any closing thoughts whenever I have any conversation about this, it's know your normal. But then I want to, like, amend that, because something I recently read was that your normal could be abnormal. Because I think a lot of us are walking around with hormonal imbalances and experiencing different monthly symptoms or just things that we think are normal, but it's actually been off for a long time.
Right, right.
You know, so yeah, that's a
But I think that's where relationship comes into play with your providers too, being comfortable to say, you know, I've been experiencing this for so many years, you know, and it, even though that seems like a norm to you, I hope that people feel comfortable enough with their providers to say, but this is what's going on. Or, you know, I'm feeling this once a month, you know, as females, you know.
Yeah.
It's been like this for 10 years, but is that normal? It might not be normal. Like you said, it's your norm, but it might not be normal.
Yeah. I think I definitely, when I look back, I've always had like cramps and like a rough cycle, or just when, you know, who's your audience? Is it male or female?
It's everybody.
Okay. Well, I there were certain things that now on the back end of this experience, I'm looking at more holistic ways to balance, just bring balance to my life, period. Right. You know what I mean? So I'm telling you, a lot of us are walking around with illnesses that we don't even realize. And then, of course, conventional medicine is going to steer you in a certain direction, which is not wrong. However, you have to be informed and you have to make sure you're feeding your body with what it needs to survive. Because your body, you know, as a medical provider, it craves and it longs for homeostasis.
Right.
But you have to feed your body with what it needs, like feed and give your body what it needs. But we're going on a tangent. I'm like very obsessed with wellness right now, but
yeah. That's a good thing because the people need to hear that. We need to hear that. So thank you.
Yeah.
It's okay to go on a tangent. What I want to know is you kind of touched on, you talking about, you know, when you went and got your mammogram done, but how did you find out that, you know, you had breast cancer? Was this something you did a self-examination like they, you know, they encouraged for us to do, or how did you find out?
So I, and this is again, right, especially as a Black woman and a Black woman who was 26 at the time, I was very in tune with my body and I always have been. And I'd always done my breast exams because like, being a child and experiencing losing a parent from breast cancer and then seeing the medical malpractice and mismanagement with my mother, which is now a larger conversation that we're starting to hear about. But it's like she went three times before she knew something was off, and it took three visits before they said, oh yeah, it is something. And now it's a stage 4 cancer, right? So it's a whole thing. But if we wanted to go back and like sue the statute of limitations, it's all up. But anyway, I digress. I have been very diligent since childhood, right? So I remember getting out the shower. I remember vividly getting out the shower and feeling it and was like, oh, what is that? And it was literally, when I tell you, it came out of nowhere. And it makes sense when I explain that HER2 positivity aspect, where it replicates extremely quickly. I'm telling you, it came out of nowhere very quickly. And I waited 1 month to see if it was like a thing that would change with, you know, all, you know how our hormones fluctuate throughout the month. And it did not change. So I went to the doctor and that was a whole ordeal as well. It was December 9th. I will never forget. It was, I went in for, I went in November, and she, the doctor felt it, and she was like, oh, that's not cancer. I felt cancer this morning. That can't be cancer. That's no, but I think she, which is such an ignorant statement to say, but I, because cancer doesn't necessarily have a feel, right?
You really say yeah. to you, I felt cancer this morning.
Girl, she, I guess another patient, but here's the thing, that other patient might have been older. She might have been like, I'm walking in 26 years old with bright purple lipstick on. They're not expecting, like, you're just, if we think about bias, right, you would not think, and this would be like a positive, you know, spin, but not really, because you cannot use words or say things based off of, oh, there's no way this could be your situation. You know what I mean? You don't, you literally don't know.
Mother, like that automatically puts you in a risk group because your mother suffered.
Yeah. But you know, technically that, so you hear words like high, what is it? Your risk, like a higher risk because of your family history. Mm-hmm. Clinically, having a strong family history, that's the word I was looking for, a phrase. Mm-hmm. A strong family history is having two or more family members, clinically, mm-hmm. when we start talking about the back end of like insurance and stuff. So there were certain tests like I couldn't take, or certain exam, like it's a thing. So yes, my mom had it, but that's still, no one else has. So technically I didn't have a strong family history, which another conversation, right?
Yeah, I but as a healthcare professional, I've never, yeah.
Girl, wow. This, yes. But what was I saying right before that?
You went in and she felt your breast. And
oh, yes. But now to give her, here's her saving grace, was that she knew her limitations, and she recommended me to a facility to have further testing. Mm-hmm. So went there for that. It was a whole day ordeal. No one said anything. And that was, like, I went back for an ultrasound, then I had a mammogram, then I had another mammogram, and mm-hmm. then I had another ultrasound. So this is literally from, like, 9 in the morning to about 4 in the evening. So there's hours passing between each exam. Mm-hmm. I'm still back there. No one's telling me what's going on or saying anything. And it was horrible. So I knew it was something from all of that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get in for a whole host of reasons until February. And they would not stop calling me. They kept calling, which was like, okay, something's going on. Mm-hmm. And was finally officially diagnosed. On my paperwork, it says February 19th, but I guess they didn't get the clinical confirmation back after the core needle biopsy until like the 24th or 25th. Okay. And then all hell broke loose. So yeah.
When you got the official news, like, were you by yourself? Do you remember how you felt?
Yeah, I was in my classroom, so I taught first grade at the time, mm-hmm. and it was like after school, around like not too long, our school day or our work day ended at 3:45, and it was maybe like 4:10, and my doctor called me, and I kind of went numb, but also, I don't know, it's as if like, I don't want to, for some reason, I have like a transformer in my mind, like my mind just kind of like transform, or my mindset transformed into just like survival mode. So mm-hmm. it's like at that moment, I highly value integrity. And I was just thinking about, there are certain things I said I would do. Like the next night was, that was a Wednesday, Thursday was math night at our school, and I was supposed to facilitate a whole rotation. So I'm like, I said I was going to do that. I need to kind of put this in the back of my head, because there are certain things I don't even know yet, right. But I need to make sure that I take care of my responsibility. So that's where my mind initially went, was get through these next couple days. And I ended up taking off that Friday. But do what I said I was going to do. And then what do I need? Start planning for survival. in terms of like, okay, this appointment and that appointment and all that. So it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of like a numb out of body experience type feeling. It's like, really?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. How did you share that with your family, or did you keep it to yourself?
No. So I called my sister first, who was my literal rock through everything. After telling my sister, and she like came over immediately like that night and then ended up staying with me for like the whole year, right? Wow. Like, because she was, I mean, she still had work and she still had her own, you know, life, which definitely was impacted by my experience. But she was there through everything, always at the house, taking care of me, like, amazing. And then I called my dad and told him. I don't remember what that conversation was. And then I remember my coworkers coming in, or one of my coworkers. And I was okay. It was just kind of, like I said, like an outer body feeling. And I remember actually telling two friends that then told their friends, and another one told their parent. And I remember saying, don't say anything. And I just do want to say that. So, and those friends, well, some of them I'm not friends with anymore, but one friend in particular, I just want to say, because one friend was like, well, I didn't know who to tell. I wanted to tell my mom. She's like my vault. And mind you, me and this friend have no beef. Like, this is my girl still, right? But I remember being so upset in that moment, because it was like, my mom, I lost my, what would have been my vault, right? If you say your mom is like your vault, I lost my vault to this very disease. It's not fair. I asked you to not say anything. And ironically, that literally got back to me. That was like a Wednesday or Thursday when I had told them. And it was already in the church and got back to my dad by Saturday, which had me like, this is why, like, people keep your mouth shut. If it's not your business, don't spread it.
It's not your story to tell. Yeah.
But I do understand that that's a heavy thing, right, to hear from a friend. But that's also why I feel like a true vault is your therapist. Get therapists.
Come go on, to therapy. Yeah, I'm a advocate for therapy. But, you know, thanks for sharing that, because I think people need to know that. And if we would put ourselves in your shoes, here I am with this news and I'm still trying to process it. And before I can even get to church, everybody know. And what if I'm not ready to talk about it? You know what I mean? Like, what if I'm not ready? So I definitely feel you on that. Yeah. But you got through it.
Yes, girl. I'm getting through. Well, I got through the worst of it.
Well, what about you? Talked a little bit about like side effects from the chemo. Are there any other like side effects that you want to share that people might not know happen when you go through this process?
Girl. Everything. I used to have like a joke with my sister and my doctors. It's like, I could come in here and tell y'all my head fell off and my baby toe is gone, and y'all would be like, oh, it's just side effects from chemo. It's like, what? So literally, like, everything. I'm not kidding, girl. Like, so on my YouTube channel, you can check it out if you want. What is my name? Deon Jane. If you put in Deon Jane or Black Girl Breast Cancer on YouTube, my stuff will come up. But I have videos talking about these things, some that are like public, but then I also have some private ones. But of course, you know, gastrointestinal things, literally on both spectrums, right? Where it's like not happening, and then now I'm sitting on the side of the road, you know. There's all that. There's I didn't really experience too much nausea, because I think I had so much anti-nausea medication that I never experienced it. But my nails turned black, of course, and they get loose. Mine never fell off, thank God. Mm-hmm. But they definitely were tender and kind of lifting. Because again, chemo attacks fast growing cells in the body. So your hair is a fast growing cell, your nails, your, another reason why people have issues with like their gut is because you have this constant change, constant cleaning, you know, when you think about even in your stomach, it like rips through that lining. In your mouth, you also have, you know, high turnover of cells and, you know, your mouth, there was, I had to have like a mouthwash. I didn't get sores, but it was weird. The taste, things just tasted very weird. I don't even know how to explain it. Mm-hmm. Slash, like, didn't have an appetite. I would lose 20 pounds and gain 20 pounds all within a week. Mm-hmm. After that first chemo. What else? My hair, of course, fell out, which was weird. Like, it was tender at first because I had cut my hair that November. Uh-huh. And then it was growing back out. I was like, I'm going to get my cute little fro back, whatever. And when I started chemo, maybe like 2 weeks later, it just felt heavy. I was like, or tender, like my scalp felt tender. It's like, I don't know what's going on. So I cut my hair because I was that tired. You're also very fatigued. I was too tired to do my hair. So I just cut it.
Yeah.
And when I cut it, I was still walking around maybe for like a week or two before I like shaved it. Wow. Because things were falling out, or it was just falling out at that point. Girl, I could keep going.
Was that devastating for you to have your hair just kind of come out like that?
So technically I avoided that because I'm not about that torture life. It's already awful. You know what I mean? And then, there was a medication called Neulasta. Mm-hmm. Any of my friends, they know there was just so much pain in other ways. It's like, I'm not torturing myself in this space. Right. And mm-hmm. I'm a person that, like, as you see me, I just cut my hair off again, right? So I don't get super attached to hair because I think my hair grows pretty quickly. And then it's hair, like, if I want to switch it up, you got wigs, you got wraps, you got gel, you got, you know, options. So it felt, I will say, cutting my hair this time felt different than cutting my hair when I had to cut it due to cancer, because obviously there was choice. Right. You know what I mean? So it was rough, but it was, and that's one of the videos I have on my channel. I had my friend came over and he helped me shave my hair, and it was just that. We were like laughing and throughout the experience, but it was, I don't know, Vicky. I feel like when you're going through a traumatic experience, your body sometimes, like, what is it? You know how you go into fight or flight?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I felt like I was in an extended period of time of fight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So was it like an adrenaline rush all day, every day? No, but there was the same impact, or just kind of like your mind going blank, or just like, that's how I felt during that time. And it was just, I don't know how to explain it. It was just like, do what you got to do.
Yeah.
To survive.
I feel you. So you kind of touched on it. You talked about getting a therapist. Is that how you kind of dealt with this mentally and physically, you know, emotionally experience?
So at first, yes and no, right? When my mom died, we did go to therapy and I did not like it. But we were forced, and I'm glad my dad forced us to go.
Yeah.
Eventually stopped, but then in this time they recommended it, and they had, like, there's all kinds of organizations that are available to you when you're going through something like this. So, or like that. But the therapist that they connected me with, we met like twice, and it just wasn't a good fit. It wasn't a good fit. And I won't even go into details about why it wasn't a good fit, but it wasn't a good fit. So I was just like, yeah, not doing that again. I did do massages a couple times, but I think the core for me was that I found a coping mechanism, which was creating the videos and editing and vlogging. And then every cycle, right? Because like I said, it would, you know, go on 1 week, and then every 3 weeks we would, you know, go back. And I felt like after my first treatment, it was like, or every treatment, it would be the first week I would feel like trash and I'd be in bed the whole week, legs horrible. It was just horrible. Second week, I felt like I was like, imagine a roller coaster and you're like climbing up a huge hill. And then the third week, I would almost feel like a normal person again. But then as soon as I feel almost normal, it's time to go back to, you know, a treatment again. So I did not get a therapist until this year, right? Which was way overdue, and I knew the importance. But as a teacher and just as somebody that was, I do too much, right, all the time, I didn't get one until this year, which has been amazing. So I think a coping mechanism, but I absolutely recommend therapy and a good therapist at that.
Yeah. I mean, therapy in general, you have to, it has to be a good fit. It has to be. I can speak from experience. It has to be a good fit, you know?
Yeah.
And it's okay to say this isn't a good fit, because they're there to serve you. So if it ain't working, it's okay. It's plenty of them out there.
Yeah.
Plenty of them out there. So you kind of touched on this too, as far as like your daily routine.
Mm-hmm.
You were undergoing treatment, but I know you're a teacher. So did you stop teaching or did you do part-time?
Yeah. So girl, that spirit of doing too much, right? I thought, I had intentions to teach through this experience. Mm-hmm. Even the way I set up my therapy, I set it up, or my first treatment was the Thursday before, or Friday before we started spring break.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I'll just miss this Friday. And then we have spring break, so I'll have a week to get myself together. And then I'll go back in on Monday or Tuesday. I don't remember which day we returned to school. Mm-hmm. And I'll be fine. I lasted 2-3 days. Mm-hmm. And my school was so, when I say they were like the unexpected, they were an unexpected support system that was just out of this world amazing. Mm-hmm. They had, like, if I needed to take a break, they had like this little chair in the library in the back, and it was like dark, and there I could put my feet up, and they had somebody cover my class. But I remember one day, just going to my principal and being like, I can't do this. I'm not coming in. I will be out. And then I was out that next day, and I just never went back. So yeah, my mom, and it's because I saw, I'm very huge on the statement to each his own now.
That's my number one statement, girl.
Yeah, like truly. And some people get offended by it, but it's like, no, quite literally, to each his own. Like, it's not, it's like factual. You got to do what works best for you, and I'm gonna do what works best for me. And I had seen my mom was getting her master's. She died in February, and she was supposed to walk that May in special education. And I had seen her, so she was at GW, right, which is this prestigious school, straight A's, raising kids, going through treatment, and being a wife, and still working in the schools while going through all this. So that was my, she was doing too much, right? When I think back, I wish I could have, like, that was my example, so I thought that was normal, and I know that's probably where I get it from, where it's just like, just, you got to do what you got to do to get to where you want to go.
Right.
But it is also okay to like sit down and do nothing. Mm-hmm. So I thought that that's what would, my experience would be, until it was like, girl, no, you ain't about to be teaching first grade going through chemo. No,
yes.
Sit down.
Yeah. Look, I'm with you, to each its own, to each its own.
Yeah.
And until you walk in that person's shoes, I mean, what can you really say? You know?
Yeah.
What can you say? Why do you have an opinion? But we ain't gonna go there.
Yeah, but some people can work through it. Like, I have people who have, I have so many women who I've connected with through my channel that have worked or have gone to school through it. But the way that chemo hit me, I couldn't do it.
But see, I think that it's good to have examples of women or people who were able to work through it and then others who chose not to, and it's okay. And again, you're not going to know what's going to work for you until, if you have to go through a situation like that. You see what I'm saying? And again, it's okay. You have to do you. You have to live your life for you, not for nobody else.
Yes, indeed. And cancer taught me that, indeed.
Yeah. Girl. When did you go back to school?
I went back January 2nd, 2017, which now when I reflect on that, was too soon.
It was too soon.
And the funny thing is, like, for the first couple weeks, or for the rest of that year or that school year, I was fine. Mm-hmm. I think it caught up to me later in terms of, like, just the classroom is extremely stressful. Mm-hmm. School is very demanding. However, I remember my first day back, I felt like that was easy because going through treatment was more taxing on my body than teaching,
right?
Which is crazy. I remember I planned my days or my weeks a certain way where, let's say, I had to see my plastic surgeon, my physical therapist, and have like blood work done and a shot. I would call them like my marathon appointment days, right? Where I would do all these appointments. Sometimes they were all in the same building, but sometimes they weren't. But I would just, my sister and I would just power through. Those days were exhausting.
I can't even imagine.
Absolutely exhausting. So, I definitely went back too soon, though. But I think that's also just, like, as a Black woman who's single and who has been doing things on her own, just because, like, that's just, I'm an adult, I'm taking care of myself.
Right.
There was also just this desire to keep normalcy.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. There are things called sick leave. You know, there are sick leave bank, short-term disability, all that, like, which, thank God I had set certain things up, so I was good.
Right.
But understanding your benefits, if you are privileged to have benefits,
mm-hmm.
Or understanding what you can get through the state or what you have access to through the state or local programs is critical, because that could literally make or break your experience. I say experience loosely, I got groceries done for me. I got gas cards. I've got, like, just, they will help make life easier, but you just have to know who to call and what to tap into, which is not always easy, but
because that was my next question for you, because you've already talked about your sister was a really good support system for you, and I can only imagine mm-hmm. how important that was. Thank God you had her. But you have some people out there who might be going through or went through, don't have a support system as far as, let's say, a friend or family.
Yeah.
Know of any kind of programs or, you know, outlets where they can get that support that you're aware of that maybe you want to share?
Yeah. So I know there are a couple. So their support can come in different ways, right? Mm-hmm. So there could be in-person support. I do think sometimes, I think depending on who your insurance is or who the hospital you're working with or center you're working with, sometimes I think depending on the situation and the needs of the patient, they may have like a nurse that goes out to check on you if you're at home. I never had that. Mm-hmm. What I did have was like a social worker that worked for the insurance company call me to see if there was anything I needed support with, which really wasn't very helpful, but they called. I know if you're looking for like moral support or just resources, There's a group that actually just started, or an organization a year ago, called For the Breast of Us. And they're actually on Instagram, and they have their own website that's specifically for like women of color and women who essentially have been othered in this conversation of breast cancer, but are impacted by it at, you know, different, just crazy disproportionate rates than white women. There's, of course, the breastcancer.org, American Cancer Society, and then there are local groups, mm-hmm. but you just literally have to get on Google. And then I know there are people like me. When I tell you, literally last week, there was a girl that reached out to me. She's in St. Lucia, and she hasn't shared anything, you know, online, and I don't think she will, but sharing my experience gave her somebody that was also young that looked like her, you know, somebody else to talk to. So
that's powerful. Thank you.
It is. And I did that also, like I said, because it was like therapeutic, but my mom had journaled. That's where I'm telling you, I learned the things that I learned from her in 12 years are just like, Lord, thank you so much. She was so intentional with us. So intentional, which is why I like mothers. I take and I think and view mothers and motherhood so seriously. This is no shade to fatherhood, because then obviously my dad has held it down for my family, girl. But my mom had journaled her doctor's appointments. She journaled letters to us, I guess, when she realized she knew she was going to die. She had like these short passages of what she thought or would like to see in our lives. And like, so I knew I know the importance of journaling, whether it be video journaling or actual writing it down. Yeah. So I kind of wanted to do that very thing for myself and mm-hmm. then for others. The same thing my mom did for me, I want to do for somebody else that may or may not have a mom who wrote down their experience, you know? Right. So,
dang, that's so powerful. That touched me right there in my heart.
Oh.
I'm happy that she did that so that you can have that. And now you're passing that on to other people. So you're doing a good thing. Keep it up. Keep it up. Because sometimes I think too, we experience things and we keep it to ourselves. And I really do think mm-hmm. that, you know, we go through something and God allows us to get through it. I think it's meant for us to share so that somebody else can be encouraged, you know? So somebody else, you know, come to you who may look like you, and you can talk about your experience, because that right there is therapeutic, or can be for somebody. It's so important. We need more of that, especially in the black community. We need to talk more.
Yes, I agree.
Our experiences. We have to, because there's people out there who need it.
Yeah. And I think something that I've noticed on social media is that people are sharing, but it comes across as, I'm sharing so that I can be an influencer in this space, or I'm sharing so that I can, more for like clout and following, and not really, which if you want to be an influencer, that's fine, but it feels very inauthentic, and you can feel there's a vibe. I don't know how to explain it, but there's a vibe when you can tell that it's just so perfectly polished, and it's like, I don't know, it's weird. It's weird. I haven't
that relatable. How is perfect relatable? Because nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't. Yeah.
But then I also feel like there's a fine line between being relatable and then just straight up complaining. I think that was something that kept me sane. Like, I obviously shared, and sharing can come in different forms. You know what I mean? Somebody, it could be, you could keep it to yourself, but share it as you're, at the gas station and you randomly share it with somebody, it comes up. You know, it doesn't have to be online or through social media or a podcast, but just be open and willing, you know, to share your experiences. But I think we have to shift as a community to think about the community more.
I feel you on that.
Yeah. You know, like it's not just, which is also why certain communities that I had invested a lot of time in, like church, mm-hmm. to see the lack of support from the body, like there were small, you mm-hmm. know, one person here, one person there. But as a whole, it felt very like, where is the community that I've been serving?
Right.
So when you don't get that from certain communities, you got to create it yourself, or at least begin to foster it. So, yeah.
But that's kudos to you for creating, you know, what you don't see, basically being the change that you want to see. We say that all the time, but how often do we actually see that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So kudos to you. Please keep doing what you're doing. For real, for real.
You know, I actually, it's so funny because I have so much more equipment and stuff to do, but it's like at work, I have so much more in terms of like, I have my business now and I have, you know, I just finished this degree and I have this job. So it's like, now it's like, Deon, again, figure out how you're going to balance and scale back, because I definitely have more to share. And my last video I posted, I think, was last summer. So it's time to re-up. But I've had all kinds of other issues that have popped up as a direct result of this situation. I had three doctor's appointments last week, even in this pandemic, because I'm like, what we're not going to do is have this one issue and then now it's just normal that you're living with chronic disease. Like, no. I'm trying to get back to a no medicine, healthy, good lifestyle, you know? So I do intend to share.
Okay. We'll be waiting for. Deon, what's one thing that you would want people to know about having a loved one who's diagnosed with cancer?
And I was thinking about this question quite a bit. A couple things. Number one, this is not fun. It's not a cute journey. It's not a, oh, now let's sign up for the 5Ks and get the t-shirts and all. Like, sure, you may choose to do that. That might help get through the experience, but this is not a coming of age situation where now I cut my hair or whatever. Like, it is a life-threatening disease or illness, and it's not about you. It's just not about you. Mm-hmm. It's about the person who's going through it. Mm-hmm. And maybe that might mean that person's not as present as you want, or they may not speak to you the way that you want, or maybe they got like, and that's not to just excuse if you have cancer, then you could be a grouch. But it is mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, like, it is so taxing. Mm-hmm. So taxing. And then to have to think about managing others' emotions, which I did. Mm-hmm. I did through this experience or that experience, and I no longer do. But just remember, it's just not about you. How can you be of a support? And if you can't, keep your distance and know the situation just might change.
Yeah.
And I'm not speaking to anyone directly, you know what I mean? Because there were people who stepped up in such a major way that were a huge support that I'm not necessarily close with, because they were like coworkers, you know, like, and we're cool, but I'm not calling you every day, you know? So it's just, again, not about you. It's about that person.
Yeah.
But do what you got to do to take care of yourself, especially if you're like a caretaker.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy at all.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. So I hope I'll hear that out there. Take note.
Yeah.
So what I want to know, our last and final question, what does life look like for you after I ordered it kicking cancer's butt?
Girl, dancing to Beyonce and twerking in the living room. I'm kidding. I feel like it's been years since we've like connected. I feel like, but I finished my master's. I just finished my master's in instructional design and technology. So I'm looking to transition into that field from education within this year or next year.
What is that? What is that? What do you do with that?
Instructional design and technology. So there are quite a few branches of that, but it is the creation of the training and creation of training materials and content for services or providers or just places. And it could be in like a gamification type, you know, track. It could be in higher ed when you think about online learning and think about like the teachers that have to learn how to use these platforms. Mm-hmm. That could be like, I would be the person that designs these trainings, or it could be in like K-12 where we are right now with distance learning, which is a hot mess because it's like underdeveloped. Because what applies to adult learners does not apply to, you know, children. So
yeah,
that, but it could also be, it could go into like curriculum design. There's just so many ways, so many That's spaces. Cool.
So like you got a lot of options too. Okay, now. We have to look at that. Okay, well, I might do a course or something from a little life coaching or something. Call up Dion. Okay, what else? You got your master's. Congratulations with that. What else?
Thank you. I now teach in middle school. When I was going through cancer, I was in elementary. So I teach in middle school, and I'm also in leadership at that middle school. Okay. I have my passion project, which I absolutely love. My sticker company and stationery company, which you also can find on Instagram, it's The Jayne L Shop, THEJAYNEELLESHOP. And then just living my life, exercising, making matcha lattes every day, just trying to be balanced and well. Because, you know, the funny thing is, my word for the year was rest.
Mm-hmm.
And I had done certain things, taken certain steps to automate and simplify my life. I had a laundry service because that is just not my forte, and I'm just over laundry, right? So that's one thing that I offloaded. But then to see the way that, I mean, this is pandemic, it's horrible, right? But it forces us to rest. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, or forces me to rest. Let me only speak for myself. Mm-hmm. To sit down, focus on me, think about the future, think about the past, think about wellness. So that is what Dion is doing right now. She is loving herself, taking care of herself, exercising, and like I said, twerking and Beyonce.
Okay. I love it, Dion. Keep doing what you're doing, and people out there, go and check her out. So you told us where we can find your business on Instagram.
Oh, yes. My main page, which I am very active in my stories, is Just Be Inc., which initially started as like my space to just share my inkings or my drawings online. So it's Just Be, which is like my mantra for life, is to just be, and then Inc., I-N-K.
And then tell us one more time where they can find you on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. So my YouTube is Dion Jayne. Or if you type in Black Girl Breast Cancer, Young Black Girl Breast Cancer, any of those kind of buzzword words, you can find me. So Dion, D-I-O-N-N-E, J-A-N-E. Yeah, on YouTube.
All right. Ooh, thank you, Dion.
No, thank you for having me.
Thank you for helping to educate the people, because like we said before, knowledge is power. So thank you
for
your experience. All right, y'all, that's gonna be it for today. I am your girl, Vicky J. Don't forget to tell your mama, your daddy, your brother, your sister, your friend, and your frenemies to tune in. Keep the conversation going. Share the episode. Thank y'all.